Welcome to the Undefined Podcast. I'm Jared Palmer.
And I'm Ken Wheeler.
On this week's episode, we're with Brent Vatney, software engineer at Expo. So what up, Brent?
Hey, man. How much? How are you?
Welcome to the Undefined.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So for those of us who don't know who are listening, tell us what Expo is and why it's the dopest shit in the world.
So Expo is kind of like this set of tools built around React Native. React Native on its own kind of requires that you know a lot about iOS and Android development to build anything non-trivial. And Expo kind of tries to make it as much as possible that all you need to know is React and JavaScript, and you can build and ship an app for iOS and Android. It also makes it just a lot easier to get started. You don't have to install Xcode or Android Studio. You just install the CLI tool, install an app on your phone, on iOS or Android, and then load up the app from your local server onto your phone, kind of like opening a web browser and then connecting to a local server on your machine from your web browser.
So what do you do there?
I work on a variety of stuff. Most recently, I've been working on this thing called Unimodules, which is kind of, there's a lot of history in it, but like long story short, we built Expo originally to be pretty monolithic, and unfortunately, that made it hard for people to use some of Expo and not all of Expo. And I think that we all learned pretty well from React's success that kind of being able to incrementally adopt something is pretty valuable for really any tool these days. And so we had this monolithic kind of tool, and people couldn't just say install our API for accessing the camera and that kind of thing. So I was working on making it so that it was less monolithic, and so anyone using React Native can just pick and choose pieces of the Expo toolchain that they want to use inside of their apps. So that was one thing. I've been working on React Navigation over the last year as well. React Navigation is like it's like routing and navigation library. It's kind of like React Router, except it has a little bit more responsibility than React Router in React Native, because React Router doesn't really say much about what your navigation UI looks like. You kind of just get the switch and then you build your own sort of UI around it. And it's pretty bare bones, but it does an awesome job at what it does. React Navigation has to be like, all right, you're going to use tabs. You're going to have like a drawer for your navigation. You need to have some way to like have a stack of screens. So you push a screen on top and you slide it away. You have a header and that kind of thing. So it sort of handles all the navigation UI and routing for some pretty large set of React Native apps out there. I think something like has about roughly 70% of the installs of React Native each week. So it's pretty widely used there. And so those are the two kind of main things I've been working on recently.
So does that shit work on web now?
Yeah, it does, right?
Yeah, it does work on web to an extent. Something I've been working on more recently is saying like, you know, it's one thing to take this model and just say, okay, let's make it so the primitives all run on the web. And it's another thing to make it actually a thing that feels native to the web. So we're having to rethink some of how React Navigation works in order to be more idiomatic for the web. And so that's another thing that's kind of...
Native on the web or native to the web?
What's the distinction?
The web sucks.
Yeah, but I feel like the idea is that like you just want to make sure it's consistent, right? So
cool. I mean there's things like you on native you expect like there to be this kind of concept of having some stack of navigation where right. you tap and then things sliding on top and you swipe them away and whatnot, whereas it's a lot different on web. You kind of want, like, I've sort of been modeling how we want it to work after the Twitter PWA. So, you know, they don't have any gratuitous animations or gestures or anything. I think it rightfully acknowledges that the web is terrible at those things on mobile, at least. CSS animations are pretty cool and whatever, but
it's like the best of what it can be.
I think if you take into account like what are the current limitations of the web and you don't try and do this sort of crazy stuff that kind of pushes the limits in terms of gestures and interactions. You just try and keep it simple, build like a thing that makes it easy to browse your app or whatever information you're exposing and whatnot. I think that's like the best way to build these things. And Twitter with their PWA does a pretty good job of just doing what the web is good at.
Yeah, it's a pretty great experience. I also am interested in the, so React Native Web is really, really interesting to me because I don't know if you guys feel this way, but when you use Twitter.com, like the mobile, the Twitter Lite, or even the desktop, even when you're using a mouse, everything feels like gooey in the sense like G-O-O-Y, like E-Y, like gooey. Like you literally can like, every time you touch something, it's got a hover, everything is a hover state, everything is an active state, and they're distinct yeah. because it's like, that's very native-like, and it feels very like touchable. So I love that, but as it relates to like building a business dashboard for it, like obviously like with React Native Web, like it seems like that's not the goal of the project. And that's also very clear with Twitter Mobile. I don't know. Like, have you guys,
do you use the web-based Twitter and Twitter Mobile?
I just like go on Twitter.com on my desktop and like, just do, I have the cookie set to like force it to the React Native Web thing.
On mobile, do you use?
I use native.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a psychopath. I'm not a masochist. Like,
I used it for a while.
I don't like fucking web Twitter. I don't like it at all.
I mean, I think it's good. It's like, as far as web apps go on mobile, it's the most, in my opinion, the most usable one that I found.
Oh, it's like 10x better than Facebook mobile.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's, of course, the native app is a lot better, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's good with the caveat, not good.
Right, no, it's right.
You know, Ken, what I mean?
Well, you were working on some stuff, Ken, right? You're working on some stuff with Canvas or something?
Yeah. I was, and, you know, it worked pretty well, but there's pieces missing there. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If I release that shit without accessibility support, I'm going to get fucking shot in the street. So, and, you know, it's not like a laziness thing on my behalf. It's just fucking not there, right? Yeah. You know,
I mean, you could release it and it could be added later. Lol.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if somebody pushes that shit in the fucking prod, you know, yeah. Guess who's the dick? So, you know? So, you know, in the meantime, you know, with the web, who knows? Maybe they'll add shit that'll make it easier to do. You know, maybe they'll do something else. I don't know. Maybe I'll be writing shit in fucking Svelte. Who knows? Maybe I'll just take a fucking check and go spend my days shooting crossbows and getting swole. Who knows?
Who knows?
So, brief aside here on Svelte, I really admire Rich Harris's, I think he tweeted it today, in response to someone asking what are the disadvantages to it, and he's like pretty straightforward and honest with, here are some reasons why you shouldn't use it. I think that a lot more tools need to be saying this kind of stuff about, you know, like for example, with your Canvas thing, you could put like a header in the README saying, you know, if you need accessibility, this shit will not work for you. This is garbage. You might as well move on to the next thing. As long as people just know up front, like, what are the trade-offs of the tool, the disadvantages of the tool that they're going to use, it's like, I think anything goes, sort of.
I think
a lot of projects also need to be a little bit, I don't know. I find that a lot of projects don't tell you that they're, I try to be transparent about that. Like, usually the shit I try to build is like solving for the 80% use case or something.
Yeah.
And not trying to solve for like the 100% use case. And so, like, I don't know. I feel like that is just being transparent about, yo, this is not going to work on like every single form, or for Formic, for example, that it's like not meant to even, is like important. Totally. So yeah, I think more tools could do that, but and they don't.
Yeah, I have a section in the React Navigation documentation, the pitch and the anti-pitch for using it, and then like recommend alternatives when there are cases where it just won't work for someone. And I think that's really helpful for maintainers as well, because you don't have people coming into your issue saying, like, hey, I want to do this thing and it doesn't work. But, well, you know, here is where I said it didn't work and here are the alternatives. So, you know, it is what it is.
Totally.
So you have been new in open source for a little while. You haven't tired of it.
I would say if I was doing it entirely in my spare time, I probably would be doing very little of it at the moment. But when you're paid for doing open source, it's a lot easier to keep doing it.
Yeah. That was always like my thing. Like, you know, like if people like come on the repo and like talk shit, and it's not a job, Like, yeah. After a while, like, my fluxometer got real low. I don't think it's ever truly recovered, to be honest. Yeah, if you're getting paid, if you're getting paid, that's a different story. I mean, not that you're, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they're still not paying for it, so it's not like you're fucking beholden to them.
Totally. But, yeah.
You know, you're being paid.
It's just, it's really fucking, like, emotionally draining doing open source sometimes. I'd say that's
really,
the...
really, really is.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing.
What about you, Jay Palms?
Yeah. I mean, so I got an email from somebody filled out a contact form on my site, and I got an email about they want to pay me for 24/7 support of Razzle, one of my open source projects. And I don't even know how to respond. Like, 24/7, like, what are you, like, fucking, oh my God, the Webpack build is broken at fucking like midnight? Like, I don't know, you want me to get out of bed? Like, do open source? I don't know. Like, no, but I don't know. They just want, like, I don't know. I don't even know. But so the answer to your question, like, that's what's going on in my, like, open source world. But yeah, no, like, again, what's interesting for us is I just open source the tools that I use. And, like, if they happen to, and I will definitely take contributions, but once things, like, steady and stabilize in certain tools, it's important to also say no a lot more than you say yes, and keep API footprints, like, small, and let people, like, fork shit and just be okay with that. I think, like, for whatever reason, people stop forking things on GitHub. And, like,
yeah. It became like a dirty thing.
Yeah. It became this dirty, dirty thing to do. And, like, it should go back and not do that. People should just be more into forking. And, like, because sometimes, especially in certain components or certain React libraries, especially, like, no, like, I don't really want to expose that API to the general public. Like, you should just fork the thing and make it yourself internally and keep it encapsulated and, like, or fucking write your own that does that. Like, there's certain things that, you know, again, it's this 80% use case thing, right? Like, if you sacrifice that, then you're probably also going to hurt, you know, you're going to end up a situation like React Virtualized or Redux Form, where these APIs, like, just explode in complexity, or Downshift API exploded in complexity, right? Where if you just, like, say no a little bit more often, and your default should be when you're having a new, somebody suggesting a new feature should be like, no, let's like explore why that's necessary and explore other workarounds and decide if it's worth expanding. And that's been my approach recently, is just like kind of a no first, which is kind of a negative thing, to be honest. It's not that I'm like disregarding PRs. It's just that, like, if there's an existing workaround that happens in React in like user land, like, and it's not egregious, then I don't know. That's been my hot take.
I love when you, like, you say no to a feature, right? And then somebody on the repo will be like, yeah, well, fuck you then. I'm going to go use this.
That happens all the time.
Or they're like, you know, it would be cool if we had support for this. It'd be a shame if that didn't happen. I'd have to go use something else.
Yeah, they're threatening their non-paying.
How am I going to pay my rent?
Yeah, exactly. I think Ryan Florence is, like, a really good one that's, like, about that. They're just like, oh man, like, maybe it was you, Ken, that has, like, a really good response to somebody who's just, like, saying some shit like, I'm going to go use my own routing solution or something like that.
So it was funny, like, way back, right? Like, before I was at Formidable, when I was at Formidable, I was, like, held to, like, a fucking standard of correspondence, right? So pre-Formidable, my open source was insane. Like, insane, like, on GitHub, like, somebody would be like, no, no, no. I'd be like, hey, fuck you. Like,
oh my God.
Like, I took zero shit. Like, if you dig up some of those old comments.
Dude,
like,
we gotta dig some of those up.
I gotta say,
the most useless notification, the most useless part of the GitHub interface for me is notifications. I can't even look at them.
There's too many,
right? I might actually turn off notifications on Formic at this point because it's just so overwhelming.
Yeah. If you had, like, one small repo, maybe, but then, like, I look at that, like, you know, it's like you look at, like three things that need doing, and then you look at, like, 100 things that need doing, and, like, the three things, you're like, oh, yeah, maybe I'll do one of those, and, like, you look at the 100 things, and you're like, ah, forget it. Like,
it would take me, it's also, like, meta work at this point, right? Like, just fucking labeling things.
It would take, like, a year to triage this shit.
It would just merely labeling all the Formic issues alone, it takes hours.
Yeah, like I'm all about like writing code and building things, but like going through and like triaging and labeling issues, fuck no. Yeah,
fuck that. No, the yeah,
you can get people to help out on that. I think that's a really good way to get people to contribute. Like maybe they can't contribute code right away, but bring them on as like someone to label issues, triage things, make sure people provide reproducible examples, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Definitely helps free up some of your time.
What ends up happening inevitably, though, is that maybe this is just me because I'm like psychotic about it, but like every time I get up with a contributor and like, so there are a couple people that I like, that like, at least in my experience, they're like, there's like, I don't know, I have certain projects that I've completely written off and like I'm not, and just like, if you're submitting a PR to this, then clearly you're using it, so fucking merge immediately. Like, and I'm not using it anymore. Yeah. But there are other things where I've given some people some, and I usually give people like wide latitude, but there's other projects of mine where like I'm really using this and I'm not merging any of your anything, like no matter how good it is. I don't know. I have a range of stuff. GitHub's a fun place.
I feel like more often than not when I've like trusted people.
Yeah.
It always ends up like some fucking earth.
Oh yeah, they explode shit. Everything explodes.
Huh.
I'm gonna revert it.
Yeah, no, I've had that happen to me, especially in Razzle, my server side thing. Like every time I've trusted anybody to do anything, literally anything.
Everything's broken.
Pretty much they'll blow it up, because they're not testing it on like a big app maybe, or just like they'll blow it up. Like
they're fixing the thing that they need.
Right, and they have no idea what.
Don't have the context of the greater project.
Exactly. It's actually interesting. You know, Dan had that sort of some thread about the React code base, or like somebody was quoting like Dan's React unpopular opinions thing, and I think it was Sebastian was like, code base is not mean. Who was saying that the code base wasn't approachable? But it's not approachable. Like the React code base is like very hard to contribute to.
Yanni said that shit?
Maybe. Yeah, it was Yanni. Yeah, it was Yanni. Yeah. It was like, he's like, he's right. It's really hard to contribute to you. Not because it's like the JavaScript is hard, which it probably is, but it's just like you don't. It's hard to get the context unless you work at Facebook and like are doing that as a full-time gig. I'm sure, yeah, Brent, do you contribute to the React Native Core?
I used to. I don't really contribute much these days, busy with projects on the kind of peripherals, but yeah. Definitely tough to get context for sure in contributing to React Native itself.
Dude, yeah. the last React Core PR that I made that got merged was for the error message on hooks, like when you have two versions of React included. And like that shit cost me a fucking whole day. And just because the error, I didn't know to get into it, but like there was an error message that I added. And like, I gotta say, like, it wasn't easy to just add a better error message.
No.
And so it's just, I don't know. Fuck. I guess, but like, if you think about it, the fact of the matter is that I'm okay with the React code base being like super complex because it delivers so much value. That if it simplifies everything else, that's an acceptable situation, I guess. But it does kind of suck that, like, same thing with Webpack. Like, if you were contributing to the Webpack core, fuck that, dude. That shit's crazy. That code base is nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think most code bases that are large are just really difficult without having spent a bunch of time on them or having someone sitting next to you explaining things to you. There's always so many hops when you go look at one line of code and then realize something on the other side of the code base somehow impacts this, or someone made this decision a long time ago for a reason that wasn't documented, and when you change it, it breaks something. And I think that it really doesn't even matter what code base you're dealing with. You're going to find shit like this all over the place.
Have you ever looked at the source of D3?
No, is that? No.
Go look at it. Not now, but like later, go look at it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Rowdy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Not bad. Just rowdy.
No, I'm sure it's probably pretty low level. All right, should we go on to meme of the week?
Hold on, but Brent, can I see your shirt for a second?
Oh yeah, sure.
Is that what I think it is? That is I think it is. You're fucking
hell yeah.
You're repping America for the podcast.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, it's Trump's attempt to color the American flag.
But but you're from Canada. Nope.
Yeah, but yeah, we could all enjoy ripping on Trump, can't we?
Savage.
Does anybody in Canada see that? And they're like, what the fuck, man?
I think nobody knows what's going on with the shirt. No. Yeah.
Do they just think you're some kind of America patriot?
I imagine. Yeah, no one's actually mentioned it. So
you walk in, fucking, you're drinking a Labatt Blue. They fucking take it away from you.
Give me a poutine.
Poutine. Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry. Sorry. I was waiting for a boot, but you said about a bunch of times. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really says a boot.
No, they fucking do, bro.
Yeah, they do.
They do. They do. They do. They do.
Maybe the East Coasters.
Yeah.
So you're in Vancouver, right?
I am, yeah.
How's that?
It's great. Best place in Canada to live, in my opinion. Great weather. Lots of stuff to do outdoors. Legalized marijuana. I guess that's all across Canada now, but it's been
really across all of Canada. Yeah, I remember that. And then I saw this article on Bloomberg about how like there's still a black market because they tax it, or they're taxing it so heavily that the black market's still cheaper.
Yeah, there's that, but also there are a few places where you can actually get it from a government sanctioned store. And so there were a bunch of dispensaries that had opened up prior to legalization that still exist, and as far as I can tell, aren't really being shut down. So
interesting. Yeah.
But it's basically under the control of the same part of the government that regulates liquor sales. So it's actually, part of the BC Liquor Corporation, as far as I understand. So.
Ken, are you jeweling?
He's jeweling.
I am jeweling, yeah.
What is your jewel pod flavor of the podcast?
Mint.
Mint? Amazing. Mint. You were on some other shit the other day.
Mango and shit?
Yeah, you were on like mango shit the other day.
Right? Yeah, they used to have all this mango shit, right? But then a bunch of fucking commies were saying that like, kids like mango. So now you can't have that shit.
You can't have mango or cherry or anything?
No, they can. They only sell like mint and tobacco in the store, and you have to get like mango delivered in the mail.
Tobacco flavored
Juul. Yeah.
That's a flavor?
Yeah.
Dude, this is an epidemic.
I know. Kids are going to want to smoke it because it tastes like tobacco.
They have weed flavored Juul?
They have just weed Juul.
I mean, there's that. Yeah, you just put the oil thing in, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess weed-flavored Juul would be like those CBD cartridges.
Mm. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah, but they have like weed Juul pods.
They sell those in Canada?
I have no idea. Probably
do. There's an office in the WeWork that we're at that's a Juul office.
Really? I met somebody from Juul when I was in San Francisco. I was at Reactathon.
It's like two former Apple, like, I think they were Apple product designers. Am I making that up? But the guys who started, or so like they started PAX, right? And then PAX like spun out Juul. I don't know. Anyways, PAX is great though. You have a PAX, Ken?
Yeah.
Fucking yeah. Party mode. You know party mode, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Party mode is legit.
All day long.
All day long.
Yeah.
You should have seen my face when someone showed me party mode, because I didn't know it at the time, and I was just floored. I could have also just been.
This was after when you saw it.
No, we were smoking, right? We were smoking the packs and like passing it around like normal people. And someone's like, dude, have you guys fucking seen party mode? I was like, what the fuck is party mode? And then he spins it around and passed to me. And then I was just, my eyes glazed over like, oh my God.
No fucking way, dude.
That is the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen.
I think you can kind of do it. You got to do something weird with it. Like, I think you can like mini party mode this thing.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's all good though.
I've done it before, drunk, by accident.
Dude, man, yeah, good. PAX, fun times.
Great fun times indeed.
Yeah.
You guys want to talk about programming or something, or what do you want to do?
Now I'm like dying.
Not really.
No, we don't really do that.
We don't do that here. That's like not for this podcast.
Oh, okay.
You talk about programming, but you know,
we do. We just like come back to it every once in a while. Like it's you know.
Like we like to talk about programming and like in the context of programming, but I guess it's more about like
metaprogramming.
Getting to know the guests beyond programming.
Because we can all like just tweet about programming all day and make announcements on Twitter and make blog posts, and we can go on Wes Boss's podcast or React podcast, and you can talk all you want about programming. But you can't come on you can't get drunk. and record it. Well, I guess you could, but like we do it better. Maybe I don't know. I don't really know. That's really our value proposition, right? Just like get drunk and record it with
the only podcast. Get an excuse to drink in the middle of the day.
Right. I forgot. It's like, wow, what the time is it there? Ken and I are like done with the day.
Right. Yeah. 3:30.
Yeah.
What are you sipping on there, Hoss?
Yeah. Let's do a drink check.
This is Brewhall Neon Lights Pale Ale, local craft beer.
Turn that around.
Let's see the label. That's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. That's metal.
Yeah. Vaporwave style.
Oh man. That's pretty dope. Ken, you're on the Miller Lite grind. I see.
A fine fucking Pilsner, my friend.
Mm-hmm. I've actually switched it up. Grey Goose.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. Is that chilled or are you drinking that warm?
Chilled. It's not disgusting.
Your upper lip look a little sweaty. That's why I asked.
Oh, wow.
You know, like when you're sitting there drinking warm vodka and you're like, ah.
No, I don't actually. I don't do that, so I don't actually. I can't really relate, Ken. I'm sorry, man. I don't drink warm vodka.
It's a Wednesday. Like a
fucking psychopath.
Well, I mean, sometimes it's not in the freezer, and you know, you do what needs to be done.
Oh my god. Yeah, I mean, like I was in college, but like now I'm not, which is great. No, so I
my fridge is full of fucking chicken nuggets. Nice,
dude. Box. So last night I went to this. I went. Ken, have you been to the Box?
No.
Okay, so there's this crazy club in New York. It's actually down the street from me. It's called The Box. And it's like it's pretty raunchy, and they have like a show and it's like really disgusting. It's like really, 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 really gross. Like
how gross?
Like dudes like it's like a voyeur like show. It's like an old school like vaudeville, like disgusting show.
Like people fucking on stage and
yeah, like that kind of shit. And like a dude sticks like a fucking thing up his ass or like whatever. It's like, but it's like a club. It's like you buy tables like thousands of dollars to get to this club. And it's like, it's a really, they have like really high performance or really, really like great acts and stuff and performance. Like they'll have some they'll have dancers. They'll do like the ribbon thing or whatever and like wrap themselves up and do all that shit. And like, it's pretty cool. And they have like great singers and shit too. But anyways, last night I go with my friends who never really goes out, and we're at like the front of the Box. And, he bought like fucking Dom bottles. Cause like what? I don't know. This guy's got unlimited capital. And also got Grey Goose too. And I just took the Grey Goose that I just showed you out of the club and brought
it. They let you walk out with it? They let you walk out of the club with it?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, dude. I just picked it up and left. This was at like 5 in the morning.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was a good night for a Tuesday. In the club on a Tuesday.
How do you dress to go to a club like that?
Phenomenal question. There are some pretty fucking weird people. I don't know, weird. Just people expressing themselves. At this particular venue.
Like feather boas?
You know, like assless chaps and like all that. You know, not me. I was wearing a t-shirt and no pants. No, I'm just kidding.
T-shirt and jeans kind of deal?
Yeah, it was t-shirt, dark jeans kind of deal.
Did you do the pointy shoes?
No, I didn't do the pointy shoes.
You strike me as the pointy shoes type.
No, I just wear a pair of Allbirds because, you know.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, classic.
Oh, it's the sweatpants of the feet.
Oh my fucking god, dude. I would love to get an Allbirds. Like, you know, you ever get the marketing emails and they're great. Like, they have amazing marketing emails, or maybe they just really impact me and I always buy and I can't help myself. But it would make my day to see that headline in one of their like hero images, like the sweatpants of the feet.
That's quite what they're going for, but
the titties and the legs.
Oh my god.
Well, that brings us into the tweet of the week, doesn't it?
Yeah, memes of the week, tweet of the week, whatever you want to call it. Ken, good segue. You get to
get this party started.
Yeah.
So much like many of my other tweets of the week, this one's gonna come from Mark. And he had one that was funny as shit. It was like you on jQuery, and it was like this picture of John Resig all clean shaven and shit. And then it was like you on React, and then it was Resig like looking way happier, like with a sick fucking beard. It was awesome. I really enjoyed it. I don't know why, but I chuckled at that.
That's good.
How about you?
My meme of the week is the React Rally like announcement that Revel is talking at React Rally.
That's fucking awesome.
I mean, that's my tweet of the week.
That's incredible, man. That's incredible.
Man. Yeah, so that's my tweet of the week.
Right. I've got one. It's not React related.
It's okay.
Game of Thrones. Are you guys watching Game of Thrones? Are you into that?
I just started.
I am.
Yeah. Shit. Okay.
Ken. I don't care. You're not going to spoil it for me. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. All right.
I'll forget this shit before I get to season 8.
All right. Well, spoiler alert for anyone listening. No, it's just this, this tweet where I'll read it out to you. So John says, my real name is Aegon Targaryen. Danny, who told you? John, Bran. Next episode. And then it's the picture of a guy in a wheelchair in flames.
That's a good one.
Ken just has no
idea. I don't have enough context to get that.
Ken laugh. It's funny.
There are dragons at one point in the show, and there's a guy in a wheelchair.
I'm a big fan of that blonde girl.
Yeah, Danny.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she's great.
Emily Clark.
Yeah.
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 The I mean, it's good. It's great. It's a great show.
Yeah, that's another thing that's been going on Twitter recently. Got everyone bragging about not watching Game of Thrones. Like,
I never bragged about not watching it. It was just like my wife wouldn't watch it, so
right.
Or I don't get the jokes. But yeah. Like now, I actually talked her into watching it. It's good. It's like fucking. It's like watching a soap opera about Skyrim.
Oh my god,
it's good. I like it. That Khal Drogo, I fucking like that guy, man. I'll tell you what.
That fucks.
That guy does fuck. That guy fucks.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, when he poured that gold or whatever on her brother, that shit was lit. I was like, yeah, you bitch ass motherfucker. So I don't trust men with blonde hair.
What?
I was excited.
Please explain.
I don't know. I just don't. Grown men with blonde hair, man. I just don't trust them. I don't know why. I don't know why. I can't really.
Can you point to one man with blonde hair that's ever done you wrong?
No.
No. Nope. No.
It's just the general feeling.
Feels good. Feels about right.
No. I mean, you know, if I. Sorry, it froze up. I said if I were to pick one that I do trust, it would probably be Stoiber.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Dude,
it's the second episode in a row that you guys have mentioned him.
Third or fourth or something. Third?
Oh, God. Yeah.
We're on a Max streak. We got to get Max on this podcast.
Yeah.
Max. We got to have him on.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to origin stories here. Brian, how'd you get into programming, dude?
Pretty standard, boring story. Just as a kid, loved computers. Played video games, got into like QBasic, did a little bit of Turbo Pascal, moved on doing some Visual Basic, which loved on this podcast.
Dude, I was waiting on the edge.
waiting for it. It hit.
And then of course,
like Andy Cohen Mazel, like that's our like Andy Cohen like word of the day. the Shotsky. Oh.
Did some HTML, CSS kind of stuff. Actually, I don't even know when I started if there was CSS at the time. There were, you know, it was like font color and stuff on the HTML elements. So it was, you know, GeoCities kind of thing.
Dude, that was the best. That was the best part of it. That was the best days of the web. We gotta start a meme, show your first website.
God.
And just like fucking be honest about it.
Oh, man,
I didn't know where it is.
Web archiver, like what is it? Is it the web archive? Like Wayback Machine?
I wouldn't even know where to look. I think it was about vampires.
Oh, dude, no. I did some shit called 4k2k.com. Probably shouldn't have just said that. But the idea was like some sort of like kids site. This was in like when I was like fourth grade or something. And it was built with Front Page. That was the latest and greatest tech at the time.
Yeah.
What did you build your sites with? Your first website with? You just hand coded it?
I used Notepad. Yeah. I mean that's the beauty of the web is you could just make all these typos and screw everything up and it would just kind of still do something. So.
Unless it was an errant comma.
Yeah. There are a few cases, but just. just basically spend hours and hours in Notepad and refreshing a page and seeing things happen and then like copying and pasting it over to GeoCities.
So one of the things I think I like most about Expo is it, or just I guess like React Native, but especially Expo, is like the feedback loop. And like one of the things that sucks ass about native development is the feedback loop is a little bit slower, at least for me, because I'm super ADD. So one of the things I like about Expo is the feedback loop that, or just React Native's hot loading and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think that's like intrinsically required for the web to, I don't know, can, I guess my, where I'm going here is like, do you think the web can have, has a shot, or is this shit just dying? Like, seriously, yeah. Like, I mean, the whole, I mean, I think on the people on this podcast, we had the idea for, Ken, you had the idea for the Kendernet, right? Which was like some sort of Expo based React backwards compat thing where you could browse and get to an Expo app. Pretty much like the way the QR codes work before they fucked you in the app store. Which I was down for.
As well.
What's that?
We have a, we're working on something that helps us get around that a little bit.
Because
Apple definitely fucks everybody in the App Store. I think it was awesome that Spotify actually took a stand and said something about it. Because what was that website?
Like Spotify. I like the capitalist in
Dear
me
Apple or something
is like a little bit. I can create examples where I could side with Apple, but I also can totally feel like if you went to Bloomingdale's or some department store and Bloomingdale's like sold their products and if you sell at Bloomingdale's, you have to use their cash registers, right? Okay. And they can like, let's mark, obviously, because you're inside of Bloomingdale's, right? You're not going to go to Bloomingdale's and go to Ralph Lauren and have like Ralph Lauren's checkout system in Bloomingdale's. No, you're going to buy the thing at the department store. And so like you can make things that are similar. You can make situations in the physical world that are, make you feel like clearly Apple's in the right. But then when you think about just like the state of the universe, you're also just like, this is fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
Well, like what if the only the only store you're allowed to shop at is Bloomingdale's?
Correct. Right. Effectively.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest problem is like, there should be an easier way for you, or not even an easier, just an alternative way for you to install apps on your iOS device without going through the App Store. If you want to take advantage of what the App Store gives you, then sure, you pay the App Store tax and you are subject to their policies. But if you want to distribute it in your own way, just like you would any app on macOS or Windows.
Yeah, so that's the hypocrisy, I think, is that, I think that to me is the biggest hypocrisy, is that like they allow you to do that on macOS, but they don't let you do it on iOS, and that's fucking bullshit.
Yeah. Well, I think that any computing platform that doesn't let you install your own software on it is just not something that I want to really see or support. Unfortunately, the reality is that they do make the best, in my opinion, hardware and operating system out there. It's just, and I don't think that would be ruined by allowing people to install their own software. Sideload, as they say.
My hot take actually is for the web to survive, Apple is going to need to get in a little bit more control. I actually think for the web, for like PWAs to really matter, my thinking is that Apple needs to allow, should put the same constraints on, or a lot of the same constraints on websites that want to get special access to local storage effectively and want to be installed. Like if the Apple set up a policy where the only time we will persist your local storage and all the things that they don't do when you add to home screen, will allow you to do that in a web view or whatever the glorified web view is, but you have to go through like Apple Pay must be the only payments and whatever, like they could do that for the web and then they could certify them and review them, by the way, every so often. And then PWAs could be like a legitimate actual development process. And then they could list them in the App Store. But I don't know. But that would also like put the web into a whole different fucked up place too. But
honestly, I think the web needs to fucking get with the fucking program here and provide like a separate mode or like a fork where they don't have to have such backwards compatibility, or they're going to be left in the dust. And you're already seeing that in China with like WeChat apps and shit like that.
Yeah, that's what that is. The WeChat is basically web 5 or whatever the fuck you want to, whatever number we're up to, right?
Yeah.
And my dad was just in China the other day and he was telling me basically that like, holy shit, the WeChat experience is lit and every single convenience store has WeChat as a WeChat app. And it's native.
Yeah.
And it's just
good.
And it's good as fuck. And it's great. And then like, you're something that you walk around and you'll see like people, like stores near you. And like, it's the way the web, it's like the natural evolution of shit. And it's true. It's like, that is the ultimate interface, right? Like, and from a performance wise, they don't have websites. They don't need that. And you can also like build your own app on it. Like you can, he's also telling me that they're using AI to build WeChat apps at Tencent or some shit, to like pre-process them and pre-make them for stores. Wow. So like, dude, light years ahead.
Yeah, dude. China's living in 2030 right now.
Dude, that shit is seriously apparently. Also, what's really fucked up is, have you guys read that article? We'll link to it in the show notes about how to build WeChat apps.
Yeah.
Crazy, dude.
Yeah. I decided also, I was going to give it a try, and then I was like, I fucking Grandpa Simpson and that shit.
Okay, we were actually looking after our last talk about, we talked about on the last episode, two episodes ago, about, we talked a little bit about some component libraries, and I gotta say, dude, have you looked at Ant Design recently?
No.
Yeah,
holy solid. Fucking shit. I beg you to come up with a thing that is not in that, just any UI pattern that is not covered in Ant Design.
Yeah.
And dude, Alibaba, or I think it's Alibaba Ant Design. I don't know. Anyways, there's an entire ecosystem of web development that we're just not a part of.
Yeah.
And it's parallel, if not ahead of us. And it's pretty fucking crazy. There's like Nest.js or Egg.js or no, not Egg. That's like the node thing.
C? CJS? SPM?
I don't know. Egg.js is like the node like framework that everybody, it's like very popular.
I remember when I was doing Slick Carousel, I get like these issues to like bump the version on CJS, which is like their NPM.
Oh, CJ. Oh, I thought you were talking about. Oh, like I have never heard of that.
Like the fucking, like the sea, like an ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have their own NPM. Oh, I guess that makes sense.
They sure do.
Holy shit. Yeah, man. Like it's,
I think that's
it's wild.
CNPM. CNPM, something like that. Yeah.
Is it?
I think so.
Dude, it would be super tight to build a WeChat app though. So like Vue is super popular in China too. My dad was saying.
CJS is the module loader.
Is the module loader? Okay.
Yeah. Man, that's rowdy. Yeah, but I thought they had SPM as well.
But yeah, one thing we're doing to get around like not being able to install whatever you want on your device, because you know, going through the App Store, we're quite limited in what we can do with the Expo client. So what you were mentioning, like we can't scan QR codes from within the app because it violates some policy of using QR codes to unlock hidden features in the app or something like that.
Right. You can't use any sort of key, actually. You can't use any coupon, discount, anything. It has to all be like some other way.
Yeah, it's pretty absurd. So what we're doing is we've created a build service that's pretty similar to something that you might do with like Hockey app. And so it just, you sign into your Apple account and then we sign the build with an ad hoc provisioning profile and you can add device UUIDs to the build and you get a URL, which you can go to that URL, press install on your phone, and then it installs it to your device right away. Anyone who is on the ad hoc provisioning profile will be able to install it as well. So it's
is there a limit? Is there an upper limit of that? Like, can you only limit to 100 people?
I'm not sure how high it is.
Oh shit.
So that's dope. A big number. Yeah.
So effectively you can now safely install an app from a URL, like direct download that you just built on Expo.
Yeah. So well at first we're just going to use this for the Expo client. So we can add all of the features that we've been unable to add because of the App Store restrictions. We're adding a bunch of them back. So you can do QR code scanning and open anyone's app and that kind of thing. And then possibly in the future, we add that for any kind of thing that you build with Expo. So you build your own app and then get a URL.
So you still can do the so the QR code then gets you a URL. Then you go to the URL. That QR registers you as a sort of puts you on the list for the acceptable things, and then you download it basically.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
it. Or you just go to the URL directly.
Okay. Yeah. Got it.
And then anytime someone goes there, it'll automatically rebuild. So you just keep that URL, share it. Someone can go there. It'll trigger rebuild. As soon as the build's ready, they'll be able to hit install. And
dude, that's lit. The web, okay, I think you're right. I think we need like a new mode. And AMP is not it. AMP is not the solution. AMP is a decent idea, poorly executed and vendored. Although I did see that Next.js added like a bunch of AMP support, which is cute. But like my thing with AMP is that it's too, it can't come from Google. I mean, it could come from Chrome, but it can't be Google. Like someone's got to step up and do it, not in a like weird, they got to do it as a spec and they just got to set the spec and do it right. And hopefully it doesn't contain web components or Polymer. And, you know, it's like, or it can, it just fucking make it, make, give me a goddamn list view. Like, that's what we're talking about. Rectangles on screens that scroll fast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I personally think a lot of things would be solved with a native, list view. Right.
That would
say like so much, but like, take it beyond that. Right. Like, have you ever used off screen canvas?
You told me about these the other day. No, I haven't. You're telling me the weirdness of the API.
Yeah, so it's like you have this canvas that you're working on in a worker, and then it kind of just like draws that bitch onto your screen, but is not affected by any main thread chatter at all, right? So if you could create these like page partitions, right, that are kind of independent of the rest of like, you know, what are essentially UI threads, like I feel like that would solve a lot of this.
Yeah, multi-threaded JavaScript would solve a lot of shit.
Yeah, because we have... You know, well, it's not just JavaScript because we have workers.
Sure.
Right? But it would be the actual having independent UI threads per page.
Yeah, more like Electron does with like what is it, like main and whatever it is. And if you just said, I don't know, something like that would be pretty
chill. Like if you had like 5 iframes that weren't iframes.
Right. Yeah, that would be lit.
Speaking of the browser and lists and whatnot, have you guys seen the is input pending API?
Oh yeah, what Facebook added this week, right? I actually didn't get to look at that. What is it? Just it just like allows you to check whether the thread is blocked or like the main thread is blocked.
So basically you get to check synchronously whether there's some input event. So like the example that they give is you can actually scope it to specific things, like if you care about a mouse down, mouse up, key down, key up, or something like that. Or just any input events in general. And then if you find that, you can yield to handle that input, or you can continue processing if you don't.
So that's going to be super lit for Formic because I can tell if I should start validating or wait.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And I think what this gives React is the ability to not have to yield, all the time, just in case there is some kind of, input event occurring, but instead check and then
Because in the new concurrent mode, basically the way it works is that last time I was reading through it, or this could have changed, but basically everything is low priority except for input events or event, like input events which are automatically high priority. Right. I don't know if those are the words they're still fucking using, but it's not high and low anymore, it's like normal priority and then like super special input blocking priority. I forgot what the fuck they called them now. But it's like that by default. So that makes a lot of sense. Dude, there's some cool, I have to say, I know the React team's fucking crushing it and doing a bunch of shit, but my entire mental model of like when shit renders is fucking broken. With like when things are mounting and with like suspense and in concurrent mode and it's just, I don't know. I feel like my mental models were wrong before, to be fair, but now, I don't know if you guys feel this way, but now with hooks and some of the stuff with concurrent mode like this, I don't even trust my mental model sometimes of like when shit happens, but maybe that's just me. I don't know. You guys feel that way or you guys are like all on the hooks grind. You totally get it. It all makes sense. And like, I'm just not. With
no, man. No, I agree with you. At this point, I haven't used hooks that much. So I can't really, I'm definitely behind in terms of building a mental model for that. I think that it's always been a little bit, it's something, it would be great if there was, I don't know, someone like, or exactly this person, Dan Abramov, to write up a blog post on overreacted.io about the mental model for React and how to think about updates. And just kind of in one place, give you a way to think about that, because I think that definitely over time, I've run into issues where I know years ago when I first realized that I think it was set state changed from being synchronous to async, and you couldn't really depend on it being like that. And that broke a bunch of things in my app at the time. I would set state and then afterwards expect something to be completed, and then it wasn't, and then you have to. Yeah. So these sorts of things that I think you just start to learn from playing around and having problems. It'd be great if there was, and maybe there is, maybe someone, one of the listeners can point it out, just like a place to get a good mental model for this.
So, I mean, I'd like to think that I have a real fucking good idea what's going on.
Yeah.
But I've been doing a lot of React perf stuff lately. So I do know when things are updating and everything like that. I guess the hardest part is efficiently controlling things from not re-rendering.
Yeah, that's right. That's where I think I'm struggling more with hooks than I was with components.
And I don't think it's really hooks' fault. I think it's just that everything re-renders by default's fault.
Yes.
And that's why I've been kind of intrigued by Svelte's model.
Yeah.
Like the spreadsheet reactivity, because a lot of things that I'm doing are spreadsheety. So it's you know, it'd be nice if just those things updated. And I mean, there's things you can do, right? You can sit there, you know, and architect it with, you know, immutable structures and aggressive you know, memo and shit like that.
Yeah.
I guess for me, there's so much like memoization and protection from over-rendering in the new hooks model, which to me feels like we go through all these fucking hoops to like memoize now. Whereas like, it seems like they got the default wrong. Like, so, if that makes sense. Like, why wouldn't you just like, I'd rather like opt into maybe updates if I don't know, maybe that's just I'm totally speaking my ass, but like, I would almost wonder what that would look like where like you're, but I don't know. Hooks also create new functions every time they fire. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like the new hooks format, like, I don't know. I like it, but like, for example, like that canvas thing, right? Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be like way, way faster, which it is up until a certain point. And I guess like the bottleneck, right, is that they're components, that every single thing is a component. You know, like if I have five rendered things on the screen and each one of those things is a component, that's going to take significantly longer than if I have one component that takes a list of 500 things and just fucking draws them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the component model, while lovely, does have this inherent overhead that's hard to get around, even with optimization.
No, I was talking with Dan about this a little bit after, you know, we went to dinner that one time, Kenway, with me, you, Evan, you, and Rich, and Dan, and after my way back, I was talking to Dan, walking back to the hotel that he was staying at, and we were talking about, like, you know, comparing and contrasting Vue and stuff, and React is not phenomenal at updates. It's he was basically, yeah, it's just not that good at it. It's not what it does. Like,
I think there's, I just think there's certain times where it's good to bail out, you know, like D3 being one of them. Yeah, I've done a lot in the React, and you know, just like working with charts, a lot of the time, if you want that shit to work properly, just bail right the fuck out of React.
Yeah. I recently did a thing with D3 and I didn't even bother. I just used the recharts thing, which is D3, but just like, you know, they render, everything renders null. It's just like configuration is JSX basically.
Yeah.
Gave up on the DOM. Just imperative, right? So whatever. I mean, yeah. But so Brent, tell us a little bit about where Expo is going. Like, what's the strategy? What's like the end goal of Expo? What's the grand vision? And also, like, how are you guys going to make money?
So one thing we've been working on recently that is really important for our future direction is supporting web as another first-class platform in Expo. So we kind of want to just make it as easy and powerful as possible to build an app that runs on multiple platforms. So the individual projects of like React DOM and React Native, they're specifically targeting like kind of how do you build it for the individual platform, but there isn't like an overarching project that says how do we make it work best and like minimize the differences across platforms and provide you with the tools that you need for building common apps and provide you with like an end-to-end, create your project, test it, build it, deploy it kind of experience. So this is something that is pretty much we're almost ready to ship the first version. We have a preview version of web support ready, and we're going to ship it properly in the next SDK release, which today is April 24th. So it could be within a week or two of now. And that'll be kind of the first step towards this idea of having like a universal React framework.
Dude, that's fucking lit. I'm very excited about that.
And then as for making money, we have a few ideas for how we're doing that. We're rolling out a paid plan right now for our build service.
Nice.
What we've done in the past is just give people unlimited builds, unlimited deploys, that kind of thing. But obviously that's expensive and it's a big kind of value add that we give for people. And so we have the option that people can deploy wherever they want. Or they can do the builds on their own servers or on their own CI or whatever. But if you want to use the hosted service, then basically Expo will be available for you to just run one command and have like the CI set up for you and have all that ready for
you.
That's
fucking sick.
So this is one of the ways we're looking at. And there are a bunch of other things that we'll talk about more over time. It might be a little early to say something right now. But yeah, kind of moving in the direction of just like catering to businesses and like, you know, if this is saving you money or like making you money, we think that you probably want to pay for it. And, you know, we've like a lot of products, we've had a bunch of people come to us up to now and say, hey, how do we pay you to make this, like, to make sure this won't go away? And, so yeah, we're working on giving them ways to give us money basically.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Should we move on to picks, Ken?
Sure.
Alrighty. Who wants to start?
You start.
I'm starting. Alrighty. Drink of the week was Grey Goose, but I'll go with the box, this club I went to, which was fucking crazy. That was my pick number one. And pick number two is kind of a hateful pick. I don't know if that's even a thing, but this is just like something that frustrated me all week, so I'll pick it out and call it out. Holy shit. The Java Servlet API is the fucking worst thing in the world.
Hate pick.
Like, oh my gosh. So in this API, you get the request and response. And let me couch this with, I'm building this thing for this app where it's kind of like Stripe, where I don't know if you've been in Stripe dashboard, but every single entity in Stripe has an audit log of all the requests operated on that object. Not the gets, just, you know, put, patch, delete, post. And you can see the requests and responses. So we're building that. And to do that, our backends are in Java and built this like servlet filter. Or I tried to, I fucking didn't get it. And you can only read this stream one time for the request and the response. And so you have to copy it, turn to a byte array. It's just the fucking worst designed thing on earth. So that's my hate pick. It's sad. Ken, what are you at?
Oh man, my picks. Oh man. And so my first pick is cleaning your garage.
Hey.
If you have a garage, if you are a garage owner, now's the time to clean it. Right about now. Today, man, I just took everything out of that garage and cleaned it. I like shop vacked up all the leaves. And you know what we have right now? We have a clean fucking garage. And it is a good feeling. Mm. All the tools are where they belong. The bicycles are organized nicely.
Crossbows are in the right place.
The crossbows are in the best place. I found weapons that I didn't even know I had. By the way, dude, I got the sickest knife today. That'll be pick two. I was at the hardware store, and I've had my eye on this for a while, but I never quite pulled the trigger. But the door on my daughter's playhouse broke, so I had to go buy hinges to put this door back on. So I'm there, I'm at the register, and what it is it's an American flag knife. And that bitch opens fast as fuck. It's got this little dingy on the back, you just hit it and it's like bah, and that shit just cracks open. It's a big ass, sharp ass motherfucking knife. But on the blade, dude, it like has like a fucking like a flag and an eagle and it says "We the People." It's fucking sick, dude. What a sick fucking knife that is. Yeah, so I'm actually really excited about that. And then my last pick for the day is beef brisket. Beef brisket is phenomenal. So you just buy one of those motherfuckers, throw it in the smoker, get that bitch to like 225, let it sit there for like 8 fucking hours.
Mm-hmm.
Pull that shit out. Ooh. Nectar of the gods. Those are my picks for the week. Brent, you got some picks?
Yeah. My first pick is Evan Bacon. He's awesome. He works on Expo Web. Yeah, he is, right? He has a great YouTube channel. Actually, it's just the Expo YouTube channel, but he posts hilarious tutorial videos, so check that out. Second pick is the React DevTools Profiler. This thing's awesome, and it's only getting better. Like, we were talking earlier about trying to find, like, you know, understanding performance, understanding when things re-render, and that kind of thing. It's an amazing tool. It's so much, we're in a much better state than we were a couple years ago with profiling and understanding performance in React apps. So yeah, shout out to Brian Vaughn, who's done a lot of work on that.
Profiler fucks.
Profiler.
So good.
Fucks. The new thing is so lit. Oh my God, so good.
Yeah, like if you're listening to this and you haven't tried it yet, just do yourself a favor. Give it a quick try. Just download it, press the record
fucking
button.
Fucking follow Brian Vaughn and thank that guy. Send that dude a fucking Grey Goose.
My last pick is working out. So I've never really been into working out until maybe like 6 months ago. And I mean, you're a software developer probably if you're listening to this. You make some money, you sit on your ass all day. So pay somebody to tell you how to work out and to make you do it like a couple times a week and you will be very happy about it.
Are you getting swole?
Not quite there, but you know, we'll compare next time.
But you're getting swole.
I'm getting there. I'm swole occasionally and then
what are you doing?
Swelling goes away. Today I did deadlifts, some other shit.
Doing barbell type shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Mainly oriented around, I guess, deadlifts and squats. And then the main motivation for me getting into it was I was running a lot and I found myself getting injured while I was running. I went to a physio and he was like, your hips are super weak. Your glutes are weak. Your back is weak.
You're soft. You need
to start doing it. Yeah. Basically like do a plank. I'm like 10 seconds into a plank. I'm like sweating and trembling. And he's like, all right, you got to do something about this. So
you're doing something about it. That's good, man.
What,
that's
what, awesome. What are you pulling, dog?
Well, my best deadlift is 290 right now. So
nice.
Getting up there. Squats doing, haven't tried for a max squat actually, but I'm doing like 5 reps of 165.
Like butthole the carpet?
Butthole the carpet.
Maybe on my first couple.
Box to butt.
Or like parallel or like.
I'm not sure I understand that one. Like a back squat.
Yeah, like when you go down, right? Do you go like nuts just below knees or like nuts on the ground?
You gotta drag those balls.
Not quite on the ground, but I go basically as low as my flexibility will allow me for the first couple of reps. And after that, it's
deadlifts. Are you like a this grip or are you like the 1/1 under grip?
Oh no, I do. Yeah, the over grip, and I think the hook grip is what it's called, where I put my thumb underneath my fingers as well to get that additional grip because still have pretty weak grip strength.
Do you ever do sumos?
No, I don't. Would you recommend it?
It's funny to do to intimidate people at the gym.
Well, you were saying that deadlifting, you like stretched out a muscle in your neck.
Yeah.
Right?
I did. I was trying to pull like a pretty good amount, right? After already having, like a lot of people will just go and just bang out one big 'em.
Yeah.
But I did like a set of 10, then like a couple sets of 5. I was like, yeah, let's throw this last one in there, you know, step it up. And then I was like,
that's when you get fucked.
Right? And then when I like pulled up on it, right? Like I lifted my head up and like I didn't get it quite like up, like I got it off the ground, right? But like in doing so, like just like stretched my fucking neck. My neck was all fucked up for like not like neck injury fucked up, but like my, you know, like your neck muscles are right here and here, like on your,
yeah,
on like the sides of your throat.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know, those things got fucked up, and then it was unpleasant. Yeah, so now I just keep my head where it belongs. But yeah, like form is so important for that shit. Like you see these, I watch like these like deadlifting videos on Instagram and shit, and it's fucking devastating watching these people like lean back and all this crazy shit. I'm like,
yeah, it's yeesh. Not good.
I'm like, you are gonna good. Fucking hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Have you ever have you seen these people that like pass out after deadlifts?
See the people that like fart? Seriously?
No, like yeah, like, just, people like, pee, people, like throw like, up pee. And shit their pants and everything.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
don't let this discourage you,
listener. Yeah, get have you seen the people that's knees explode? Oh my god! Yeah, yeah. It's like fuck.
Yeah,
you should work out.
Exactly.
Like I've been there. I've been like deadlift woozy, but I never passed out.
Word.
Have you ever been deadlift woozy?
Oh yeah, every time.
You're like, you.
Every time I do like anything close to my max,
it's a lot. It uses everything.
Yeah.
I should deadlift tomorrow.
Word. All right. Got to wrap because I got to run. But yo, Brent, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, dude. Always a pleasure.
Always. Yeah. And I'll see you in Paris at KFC. Yeah.
KFC. And we're emceeing together. So
we are emceeing React
Europe. And you're keynoting. So.
And I'm keynoting. It's like,
yeah. No responsibility for you there.
No, I just got to show up. but yeah, so thanks for how can people follow you, Brent?
I am not Brent on Twitter. I'm Brent Fatney on GitHub. And yeah, I guess those are the main ways.
Do you have like a WhatsApp? I'm fucking with you.
He's fucking with you.
I actually don't.
Alrighty, folks. Well, thanks so much for listening. You've been listening to Brent Fatney. Wow, Brent Fatney, software engineer at Expo.
Brett Bratney.
Anyways, for the Undefined Podcast, I'm Jared Palmer.
And I'm Ken Wheeler. Fuck Thanks you guys so- until next time.